So last time we had mentioned that although the term Das Torah, literally the knowledge of Torah, the thinking of Torah, the mind of Torah, is roughly 100 years old, to refer to a certain level of rabbinic authority, so the term is relatively new, but the concept of rabbinic authority, as you mentioned, really goes back to the Torah. The Torah is just a quick recap. The Torah says that when one has a question of religious law, financial disputes, so one brings the case to the judge in their days, and the Torah says, "Al pi haTorah asher yoruha," from what they direct you, "Val mishpat asher yomru lecha taseh lo sasor min hadavar asher yagidu lecha yaminu smol." So the judgment that they give you, the judgment, at least directly, this is referring to the Sanhedrin, but perhaps it could apply more broadly. But the judgment that they determine, you have to follow it. Don't veer from it left or right. Rashi quotes a medrash which says even if they tell you left is right or right is left, though really it means if it seems to you that left is right and right is left. Obviously, if they say something, I'm not going to mention the recent example of the extra prohibition in the Torah, but something like that would seem to be would seem to be beyond what the Torah says. But if there's a ruling that's a matter of what's called a shikel hadas, of weighing different factors, so one brings it to the court and they determine something, so one is obligated to follow it. It is possible that a court can make a mistake, and then they do bring a korban on behalf of the people. It's basically what Maseches Horios deals with. But when they give a ruling, one is supposed to follow it. Even a member of the Sanhedrin who felt that the halacha was differently, so he can't then instruct other people to go against the ruling. The Sefer HaChinuch applies, as he says, b'chol dor v'dor, in every generation. Even though the rabbinic sages after the Sanhedrin don't have the same level of unanimous authority, but in every generation, the judges, the Torah scholars, one is obligated to follow their rulings according to the Sefer HaChinuch. Who are these scholars to which this obligation applies? The Rambam says that really, this is source 4, that a central authority, a central body to which everyone has to listen, really ended with the closing of the Talmud Babli, roughly in the 7th century. Everyone agrees Talmud Babli is authoritative. No one can go against that. After that, once Jews were spread out into different communities, there was no longer a central authority, and therefore each person in each community is obligated to follow their local authority. On what issues is one obligated to follow? So clearly on matters of halacha, but also the Rambam says, others say, that it can even be different edicts, enactments, different community policies. Those would fall under the what one would have to follow a rabbinic authority. The position that, so the question now becomes, what about, let's say, we'll call them divrei reshus, matters of personal decision, not necessarily could be matters of policy, could be different directives, not clearly matters of mutter and aser, prohibited and forbidden. So to what extent is one obligated to follow the authority? To what extent are halakhic authorities given the authority to determine those things? So we saw the Rivash, this was 7, who said a rabbi really only has authority over their city. I didn't put this on the source sheet, but actually the Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, had a position that he says, why is everyone coming to ask you about things that, really they should be able to decide themselves? Though we have, and this is why I felt was a good springboard for today's discussion, Was source number six, in the Drushas Haran in the 14th century. And he says, just as we turn to rabbis in matter of Torah law, so too, we must turn to them in matters of hashkafa, we'll call the meta halacha, philosophy, ideology, perspectives. And he said, a Jew who turns from their words, even in matters beyond explanation of mitzvos, is an apikoros and has no portion of the world to come. So this led to quite a passionate conversation, robust discussion, and justifiably so, because it's unclear that from the earlier sources that one has to necessarily follow Torah scholars in all matters, but we can even glean, as you saw in the Rambam, that the authority, this idea of listening to Torah scholars goes beyond the strict letter of the law. But the question is, how far does that go? So today, I want to explore two basic questions. To what extent does, when we're speaking about Das Torah, to what extent does, and on what type of issues is one supposed to, is it advisable to follow rabbinic authorities? And who has those rabbinic authorities? When we say Das Torah, we're talking about these rabbinic authorities, so we don't have a Sanhedrin. It's after the time of the Talmud, where we don't have a central authority. So who are these people when we're talking about, even regardless of the specifics of what type of issues, who we have the what and we have the who. So I want to explore that. So let's look literally at Das Torah, literally knowledge of Torah, wisdom of Torah. So in general, the way it's used and understood is that beyond mastery of specific halachic texts, there's an idea that certain, and this is what's referred to as Das Torah, that people who have spent their lives learning Torah, immersed in Torah, dedicated to issues affecting Klal Yisrael, that those people have a certain wisdom. The Torah gives them a certain wisdom that can help and that can be valuable in advising on decisions beyond just strict Torah law.
Advising?
Advising, so paskening would really be
halachic,
right? That's what a psak is. A psak is, and oftentimes the line between what's halachic or hashkafic can sometimes be blurred. Sometimes what we call hashkafic, you know, that there's halachic bearing on the question.
There's also a difference between advising and directing.
Right, right. And we'll see that advising, directing,
advising and
mandating,
and
those are. Right, so psak halacha is, as we saw, it's more clear that, you know, assuming the rabbi knows what he's talking about, that one is obligated to follow them. It could even be that if there are multiple opinions, but one asks for a certain psak, then many times one is in fact bound by the psak that he or she received. So that's going to be the question on things that are called a meta halachic, not strictly matters of halachic, even communal policy, public policy, even personal decisions, to what extent do we consider that Torah scholars have insight to direct, and to what extent are people bound by those directives, if at all? So I'll just pose the question, and I think whatever answer you give is within a range of approaches that have been established. What do you think about the idea that someone who has been immersed in Torah has a certain wisdom or level of insight beyond just strict knowledge of the law?
My own sense is in I don't know about the Haredi community, but I know about I don't even say Hasidic community broadly. I know in the Lubavitch community, they distinguish between the function of a rabbi. Of a Rebbe. A Rebbe it seems to be much more somebody you consult about those meta-halachic issues and hashkafa than about, you know, kosher and trade.
Right.
Right? Look at inflation.
Though they will probably say, and I think the understanding is, because he was someone who was a great, tremendous Torah scholar, that perhaps that also provided him with insight into other things.
Well, they have a concept of somebody who's a mashpia.
Right.
Right? And you get to, you know, select your mashpia, who's going to be the person who sort of can give you guidance and influence your thinking and your decision-making. But on very clear matters of halacha, the mashpia, a good example today, my dad is, you know, on life support. My brother contacted his mashpia, who he's, you know, been close to for, you know, 30 years now in the community. And the mashpia said, you know, on a matter like this, you really should speak to the...
Right, a mashpia, it's more of a term in the Hasidic community, and the non-Hasidic community, a similar position oftentimes in yeshiva is a mashgiach, yeah. But similar idea that someone, call it a counselor, more of a spiritual mentor, as opposed to what we call a rav or a posek, who one goes to for more strict halachic questions.
You need to consult the rav.
I mean, you know, I've been listening attentively. I think there's limitations even for, you know, let's just say that we believe that they have, you know, they're inspired and they've got gifts that matanot that we don't have as ordinary pas yidden. But, you know, I would still say that even so, I don't think it permits them to do whatever they want. I think there's limitations to what all these rebbeim are able to do, even no matter how high halakhic authority they are. As an example, you know, I'm hoping this doesn't affect anybody here or has affected, you know, a woman who wants to divorce her husband, you know, Rav can't, I mean, he can't push, he can't put the, lift the guy's hand and put the inner,
right,
in his wife's hand. He may be able, I'm told there's limitations, may not even be able to place him in a cherem. He can turn a blind eye and hopefully his congregants will beat up the guy or make time to...
But that's not necessarily true. There are cases where halacha does, not in every case, but where halacha, as a matter of black letter law, would mandate that a husband give his wife a get, and in that...
And if he has to be coerced, people would coerce him.
They can throw him in jail, he still can't do it. It happened in Israel.
Even doesn't halacha, some say people can beat him until he...
Right, so that is
why...
He
can sit in jail. And that's happened.
A get has to be given willingly, but there are different methods that are allowed to put pressure.
So, in answer to your question, yeah, I think, you know, there is certainly a hierarchy, for lack of a better word, in terms of authority, but I'm not sure, you know, for anybody who wants to circumvent that and not necessarily have to listen to anybody can opt out. So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's with anything. But I think the real question is, this is more beyond the black letter law. And let's just say personal decisions, advice, or public policy.
Such as?
Like, give an example.
Yeah.
Such as, let's say, who to vote for. Mm. It's somewhat of an extreme example, but sometimes...
Isn't that sort of governed by civil law? Religious organizations lose their tactics and status.
So that could be if there's an official endorsement.
Especially in Israel, you know, if your party doesn't get in, you may use some of your rights in the next.
But there are some great rabbis who, when there's an election coming up, some rabbis will say that, I don't know if it's a psak or a directive, that one should vote for a particular party. Mm-hmm. Again, there are other things. Some of them have a halachic bearing. Let's say, like Land for Peace, or there are other.
Even the right to die, like, you know, that legislation, can, you know, a government's going to grant the person ability to have a doctor kill them, essentially.
So that's really more. I think that would really be more halachic. That's really a halachic question.
But the rabbi could impose or suggest to his kahila that don't vote for this government because they're going to do something that's against halacha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. And right, there may be a halakhic component, but there could also be an overall ideological.
But like a shul policy, for example, can a non-shomer Shabbos get an aliyah? Can a non-shomer Shabbos lead the davening or something like that?
Right,
is it strictly halakhic?
So there are definitely halakhic aspects, but that could be an example, or maybe those types of policies involve judgment calls that are maybe beyond. I'm just thinking of that issue, that there could be a halakhic argument one way or the other, but I imagine in some communities they've consulted someone who, let's say, is considered a rabbi's rabbi, call it, and maybe there are issues, some of them of black letter law, but others of judgment calls of, is this going to alienate people? Or as a shul, do we want to make it clear that Shmir Shabbos is essential value? So there are those types of things that are have halakhic, that there are halakhic bearings, but maybe you're also, there are other considerations. But let's say some people go to a Hasidic Rebbe to ask about, also say somewhat of an extreme example, what are medical decisions? Should I get the surgery? Should I marry this person? That could be one example. Yeah. Should I move to this place?
And again, they in the Hasidic world that I know, at least, they go to a Rebbe, not a Rabbi.
Right. That would be a Rebbe. And there are also an idea of Das Torah, but also in the non-Hasidic world that also became more of a...
I think you can draw
idea.
The comparison, like if an average person, even a non-Jew on the street, a young person wants to get guidance, they go to their mother or their father. Let's just say a man goes to his father to get some advice. To them, the Rebbe is their father. So
there's a certain intimate
advice.
relationship. But it is, I think, beyond that, and we'll see how... Different great people outline the concept, but even somewhat objectively, the idea is that objectively, few people who have achieved a certain mastery of Torah and have been immersed in Torah to such an extent are perhaps able to give guidance beyond Torah. So that's the basic concept. We'll take a look at the who and the what.
I mean, I think, if I may, I mean, I think that's the whole issue here. We use the word da'at, right? It's really the wisdom. So a lot of people can acquire learning, but wisdom is actually a step above where you're actually, you know the right way to apply the knowledge.
And does that come from, the question really is going to be, does that come from extensive Torah knowledge? Does it necessarily, does it always, or does it maybe not? There are different perspectives on this, so we'll have to take a look. So, really, to whom does this apply? Who might be someone who has Das Torah? So, in source A, from Rabbi Manning's source sheet, he quotes from the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim passed away in 1933, so he's really a great authority that ran the turn of the century, late 1800s, early 20th century. And so he says, who has Das Torah? So he says, Vay Omer, mi shedato Das Torah, yochol liter kol bayos ha'olam beklal uveprat. That someone who has Das Torah is able to interpret, able to offer guidance on all world issues, or all bayos ha'olam, problems of the world, globally and specifically. But Ella shatanai, no, that there is a, on the condition, shadas Torah tia tzlula bli ezu penia o netia kol shehu, that he doesn't have any pull in other direction, doesn't have any other considerations. Adam shedas Torah lo ela she mureves afilu ma'at im deos acheros min hashuk o min ha'itonos hare das haTorah achurahu. So this is someone who has knowledge and mastery over the Torah. However, if this knowledge is mixed in with he says, things from the ideas from the marketplace or from the newspapers, that will affect the person's Das Torah. So according to the Chafetz Chaim, a person can have Das Torah, he says, only if his knowledge and perspectives come exclusively from Torah.
So it's assumed then, let's just say the ways of the world, the Derech Eretz that we need to have. So you, one would therefore, you're suggesting that it only comes from Torah?
That's what
includes a Talmud, I presume, too, right?
Right, right. They think meaning all the entire corpus of Torah.
It doesn't say a person who also has secular knowledge,
worldly
secular knowledge, is excluded from.
He's saying that doesn't give Das Torah. In other words, if you think that knowledge is going to help you decipher something, that doesn't give you an ability. Right. It doesn't increase your Das Torah.
Right.
It doesn't contribute to it. Right. Yeah.
But he says it shouldn't be mixed up.
So it could be. So it says, so let's look closely.
Lubavitcher Rebbe was an aeronautical engineer.
That's right.
So this was before the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and this was not. This could be perhaps even a different perspective. So we'll just look again. This is the third to line from the bottom in the box. Elishim meureves afilu ma'at im deos acheros. If in his knowledge, I could read it either in his knowledge or in his advice, but if in his deos, his ideas, his philosophy, any ideas from the marketplace or from the newspapers, basically contemporary secular ideas, I think it's clear that's what he's referring to. Hare Das Torah Achurahu. His Das Torah, or his ability to have Das Torah, is negatively affected.
So that's like gossip almost, right? Because if you look, for example,
the Chofetz Chaim definitely didn't like gossip.
Of course, right. But for example, the Sforno, who was a doctor too, and you know, he was a very, what he, when if you read his version of the Chumash, it has, when he gives, when he does his pshat, he sometimes incorporates medical theory, medical knowledge into his explanations to help bring a point across. So it's not necessarily, you don't learn that in the Torah. You may learn in the Gemara a little bit, but the point is that I think you have to you probably have to distinguish what kind of knowledge is really exempt from increasing your Das Torah.
We go back to the Rambam too.
He was a doctor.
That all may be true, and I don't like the idea of theorizing what one would necessarily. So speaking for people who live in the past, so I can't tell you for sure what the Chofetz Chaim would say to that. I mean, certainly he respected and learned and incorporated the Rambam and the Sforno, so there's no doubt about that. Right, right. It does. So maybe if it was from someone else who is already put into Torah, but at least from his words, he does say that whether it's this person, if the person studied, or if his advice, his philosophy includes things that come from outside of Torah, that person doesn't have Das Torah, or is Das Torah is negatively impacted. I think that's what emerges.
Who was the one who incorporated his?
I'm not saying that there are not other ideas. I'm saying this: if you look at his words, I believe that is what he is saying.
Who's the great halachic authority who incorporated his study of Aristotle and the idea of the golden?
Well, there was the Rambam. There was the Rambam.
Was the Rambam?
Yeah, he was knowledgeable about.
I cannot tell you what he would answer to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I there's not no doubt about it that he held of the Rambam. I'm just looking at his words. It sounds like he say for someone who's qualified to have Das Torah, I believe that he is saying his position, it sounds like, cannot have purely Torah and not anything else. That seems to be what the Chavetz Chaim is saying. The next source, number two, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was one of the primary students of the Chavetz Chaim. He was actually killed in the Holocaust. He came to America. He would have had the ability to stay, but he went back. His students were all in Europe, and he ended up he was killed. One of his sons survived. Rabbi Simcha Wasserman was a rabbi in California. He was a primary student of the Chavetz Chaim, and he says, this is source two, Af Misha, so this is explaining what abilities, what we mean by that story. He says, Af Misha Zacha L'Seichel Yashar, even someone who is merited to have a proper knowledge, Hare Yesh Gvul L'Siklo Hanoshi. Nevertheless, there's still limits and boundaries of human wisdom, L'Chein, or human insight, wisdom, L'Chein, you know, Ayetz L'Hakil Das Torah Shehi Ein Sofit, that there's no limit, so datam shall anashim hapeshutim mureves bekli mine yashpos v'deos mina shuk v'hiotze bazes. So he's using similar language to the Chavetz Chaim, that most people have ideas from the marketplace, from outside of Torah, echeyotze behed and similar. Uvachol she hataroves meruba yoser kach. And the more outside ideas and that one has, the more that decreases one's Das Torah. Lefichach, therefore, Rak Mishamachil Bekirbo Das Torah, Nikia Bimea Huzim Lolo Shemetz Shel Tarovis Midas Acheretz Kolshehi. Someone has Das Torah, doesn't have any shemets, any little bit of other types of knowledge mixed in, yacholios, yoetz bar samcha. Then someone like that is able to give wisdom that one can rely upon.
So he doubled down on his rebbe.
It sounds like that. It sounds like that he's taking at least the same approach, if not saying it more starkly, that there is a indirect relationship between Das Torah and.
But you start off the phrase by talking about the knowledge from the marketplace. You know, knowledge. I don't think it's fair to equate the knowledge one acquires in university, even just the sciences, for example, with that of the knowledge one acquires in the marketplace.
That could be, and that goes back to our shiur on secular studies. I do think it would be reasonable to say that had he intended to make that qualification, that probably would have said that.
I don't agree.
I can hardly imagine that the Rav, right, and the whole Yeshiva University approach to Torah im Derech Eretz, right, would align itself to this modern.
So probably not. I think Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, right, when he came to the United States, he was invited to give a shiur in YU, and he did not.
Right. What about Bar Ilan University?
I think Rabbi Chanan, I'm pretty sure it was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, he did not give a shiur in YU when he was in America. He refused to give a shiur in YU. I think even Rav Aaron Cutler, who founded Lakewood, when he came in the 30s, he actually gave a shiur at YU, and he was not aligned with that approach. But Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, I believe, did not refuse to give a shiur at YU.
Currently, Lakewood has certain relationships with local universities that students who are studying in Coyle or whatever at Lakewood can also pursue.
So I think that's purely from the perspective of being able to make a living.
Right.
I think Lakewood, it's not even officially, endorsed or official partnership. I think Nary Soil in Baltimore, one can transfer credits.
John Hopkins.
How do rabbis expect people like the rabbis to survive if not from the wisdom that their congregants or even their supporters are getting from wherever, even in the marketplace?
So maybe it's not for everyone. He may be saying someone who's able, who has this, call it beyond human wisdom. He said there are limits to seichel and noshi. So most people don't have this extraordinary. I'm not going to use prophecy. I don't think that's what he's saying. But maybe even a certain divine insight. People who have that, he's saying, are people who do not have any type of.
Okay, so maybe at least we can say is that they may not be dissing entirely the notion that people should go out and get some kind of skill that make a parnasa, then it's not.
So skill and parnasa, Rabbi Hanan Wasserman actually has a letter about university where he says, I think if it's purely for parnasa, and there's, you're not going to learn apikorsa, so then he actually says that it's okay.
Right.
But so not
they
because.
They may not be dissing it entirely from the point of view of their congregants. They're just saying, if you want to rely on somebody for Das Torah, the best, highest grade of Das Torah is going to come from somebody whose perspective is not clouded at all by any other consideration.
I think that's exactly what he's saying. I think that is true. Mm-hmm. So you go over to the second page. Rav Dessler. He takes a passionate stance defending and promoting the idea of Das Torah. And he says he has seen this from the great personalities that he had encountered and interacted with. He says, I have had the privilege of knowing many of these greats personally, such as the Chafetz Chaim, Chaim Brisker, Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, and I have seen them at the conference concerning Jewry at large. He says, I can honestly say, he says that their intelligence was astounding, their analytical insights were extraordinary. Additionally, they had total involvement and concern with issues and concerns and problems related to Klal Yisrael, and therefore they have a certain, call it siyata d'shmaya, divine assistance from both their knowledge and their acceptance of responsibility for the Klal. And therefore, he says, similar to what we saw from the psukim in the Torah themselves, that one must follow their directives. That there's a level of authority. And he says, the sages said that we must obey the Beis Din, even when they say that left is right. He said, one should not say that the Dayanim erred because I, the puny one, see clearly that they have erred. Rather, as we saw from the Medrash that said, even if it looks to you like left, like they're saying left is right and right is left, says rather one's own perception must be nullified before the brilliance of their intelligence and their siyata d'shmaya, their divine assistance. The sages have said one Sanhedrin cannot nullify a ruling by an earlier Sanhedrin unless it is greater in wisdom and number. So he says, besides, it's probable that what we perceive to be fact is nothing but fantasy, and this is an idea of Das Torah, Emunas Chachamim, faith in the sages. And he says, the absence of self-negation towards the rabbis is the root of all sin and the beginning of all destruction, while all merits are as naught compared with the root of all faith in the sages. And he's probably addressing more public policy issues, that one should, on matters of halacha certainly, but even on communal policy, one must, and he says strongly that it even has a status similar or akin to the Sanhedrin of essential Beis Din, that the idea of lo sasur, not to deviate from left or right from the rulings of the sages, of the judges, he says this applies to certain, we'll call them Gedolei Hador, certain greats of the generation. So not only does he say that there are people who have that type of insight, but their directives must be followed.
We have to self-negate our own perceptions, even if, right?
That is what he said. And the next source, the Chazon Ish, he was...
when was Rav?
Avram, what?
What's Rav?
In 1952.
In 1952 is actually in a Toronto Torah article today. No, it was last week that I quoted him. And I'm sorry, you were saying?
The Lubavitcher Rebbe became Rebbe in 1951.
It was a year after the Yahrzeit of his father, so his father died in 51.
Right, he was
51. Oh, it was 1551, but around that time. And the next source, the Chazon Ish, Rav Avraham Yishai Karelitz, he was towards the end of his life. He was a rabbi in the leading rabbi in Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish. He was one of the great halachic authorities. Tremendous amount of halachic literature from him. So he says the viewpoint that divides the Torah into two questions of iser v'heter, of what's permitted and what's prohibited and permitted on the one hand, and guidance in everyday life on the other, and holds that for iser v'heter, for purely halakha questions, one should subjugate oneself to the sages of one's time, while leaving other matters to one's own free choice. Since this is the viewpoint held by the heretics of old in Germany, who drove their brethren to assimilate with the other nations, says for one to distinguish between instruction regarding Isser V'Heter in matters of legislation constitutes denigration of Talmidei Chachamim and places one in the category of those who have no place in the world to come. Where do we see that? We saw this from the Ran.
Right? Right. And he's from Bnei Brak.
He lives in Bnei Brak.
This is the same community where they throw stones on Shabbos?
I don't think they throw stones on Shabbos.
Throw stones on Shabbos at cars, right?
I don't know if Bnei Brak or Mayor Sharim.
That was Mayor Sharim.
Many other communities do, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't justify that.
So this is not considered modern Haredi, is it?
No, I think this is the model, really, of the Israeli Haredi.
You know, there's also the viewpoint, like, you know, if you want to maintain that central authoritative figure that you can always have reliance on. If you start having these rabbis delve into the world where they're not experts on, you end up making them look like, you could potentially make them look like fools. And as a result, they lose their credibility. So it actually is a way of guaranteeing that their central authority stays to some degree.
So I think...
And that's why I think there's limitations to this dust or...
So
how does this all relate to the notion in the Pirkei Avos of Aseh Lecha Rav?
I think it's very directly related that one should have a mentor. So now that could be halachic issues or like
right?
It's actually a choir.
Yeah.
Well, it's Kanela. No,
you're right.
Yeah.
It's make yourself a rav.
So if I choose as my rav, you know, somebody who holds like Soloveitchik, right? That doesn't mean, does that mean I'm showing lack of respect for all these other perspectives? I'm going to hold by Soloveitchik's opinion on halachic matters. But I'm, you know what, did Soloveitchik also have what to say about secular public policy?
He did about the treatment of gays. Like there was a famous a lecture that he gave about, you know, the issue of gays. And you know, if you listen to it, you'd be very surprised that a rav would actually delve into that world.
Yeah.
Obviously, had something to say. I mean,
so we'll actually see his opinion. His opinion will be significant. A Aseh Lecha Rav could be that for halachic matters, or could be more than that. The Chazon Ish says, and he uses similar language to what we saw in the Ran many centuries earlier, that one should and must. Follow great Talmidei Chachamim on things other than just black letter law. We'll see next Shamshon Raphael Hirsch in Germany in the 1800s. He's really associated with Torah Im Derech Eretz. And he says the sphere for human research is limited. The min hayom asher bara Elokim adam al haaretz, after the creation and in the space of lemiktas hashemayim ve'ad kitzei hashemayim, from one end of the heaven to the other end of the heaven, says we are denied knowledge of it, of, and it's useless to try and probe to find out what was before the creation or what lies beyond the created material world. But to obtain knowledge of nature and history, which is open to our research within these limits, is not only something permitted, but something which is eminently desirable to the fullest possible extent. For only a mind armed with such a wide panoramic view on all matters can draw the right conclusions of the Jewish position in the world.
So, Rav,
so it sounds like he's saying that no, in order to understand the world and to make decisions on all matters of life and dealing with all matters of wisdom and knowledge, one should have knowledge of those disciplines.
That sounds like it's in contradistinction to the earlier, to Wasserman.
This was actually later than he's writing before Ruchan and Wasserman.
A different perspective, right? This seems more
Rabbi Hirsch was in
positive on secular knowledge. As long as
yes.
It doesn't cross those boundaries, right?
Yes, yes. It certainly sounds like that.
So when it comes to the story, how is it that you have conflicting views of, for example, creation of the State of Israel? You had Das Torah on both sides, it almost ridicules. No offense, but it almost ridicules the role of the Rav, the religion, if you will, in helping to arbiter a civil matter. Because the fact that you have
that's the question, and then we saw from we saw from the Rambam that after the redaction of the Talmud Bavli, so there's no central authority, so then it could very well be that there are different, and the Rambam says that each community. So the Rivash said that each community can turn to their authorities. So there could be, in fact, we have this concept of Elu ve'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And
right.
Again, that's a discussion of how
yeah, we're not
how that
about
would.
Hillel and Shammai. We're talking about like.
But maybe it is equivalent.
I
maybe
agree.
there is a similar idea that there are different opinions, but they have validity.
And you're bound by them.
Perhaps that someone who's in a community when the great Torah scholar of that community holds a certain way, then perhaps one is bound by that. It would seem at least from, let's say, the Chofetz Chaim, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, and Rav Dessler, that would be the case. Now we're dealing with in the latter half of the 20th century, on the third page, this is an example of a public policy issue, though there was some halakhic bearing, was the question of, and this was a major hot button issue, the question of should Orthodox rabbis join, it's now a defunct organization, but join the Synagogue Council of America. Distinguished from the Rabbinical Council of America, the Synagogue Council of America, probably equivalent types of organizations are, Board of Rabbis, maybe even Federation. Should Orthodox rabbis join the Synagogue Council of America, in which Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox rabbis sit? And the idea was they would not decide halachic matters together, but decide issues related to the Jewish community. But it would be public policy, but it would be one organization. So Soloveitchik was, although it was clear that he did not endorse or validate non-Orthodox ideologies, he was open to joining this organization to not to decide anything having to do with religion or halakha, but on issues issue public policy issues related to Israel.
How could he do that? He's accepting the dust tour of their movements.
So this would be not that
he was joining them.
Well, that he was. The organization was an umbrella organization. It was not to deal with religion. It was, let's say there's a policy about Israel or there's some issue affecting the Jewish people, not having nothing to do with religion.
But how can that be? Everything to do with the Jewish people has to do with religion.
Not halacha, not theology. We have this now.
Torah. I mean, it's all comes from the same source. In other words, every matter that affects the Jewish people
has inspiration
from Das Torah.
So we see there was major disagreement to this, and perhaps that was part of it.
What year was this?
53.
This is right. This ban was in 1956. Mm-hmm. 11 major Rashi yeshiva, including Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Aaron Cutler, Yaakov Kamenetsky, and major figures, all signed, and this is really a concept that many parts of the Orthodox community, I think Agudas Yisrael has this policy today, that they will not join any organization, maybe in any event or panel, that consists of non-Orthodox rabbis. Now, there are some cases where they'll lobby for certain, let's say against, I'm not taking a position, whatever, not the Iran deal or something like that. There were different groups that spoke to, I remember, spoke to their congresspeople, but in general would not join any, they forbade joining any communal organization, even if it was only on matters of communal concern. And this article from the Jewish Observer, which was really the magazine of Agudas Yisrael, went out of print a couple of years ago, so there are older editions and a lot of fascinating articles. It says, Das Torah involves a lot more than a Torah Weltanschauung. I always like people like to use the word Weltanschauung. It means like a worldview. But
it's a German term.
But it's like in the Jewish, you've only ever heard it in like the Jewish world.
Worldview.
So I don't know if people are fancy. You see that a lot. Or a Torah-saturated perspective. It assumes a special endowment or capacity to penetrate objective reality, recognize the facts as they really are, and apply the pertinent halakhic principles. It is a form of Ruach HaKodesh, divine, I can use our Holy Spirit, that's literally what it means. But
inspiration.
Right. As it were, which borders, if only remotely, on the periphery of prophecy. So this was an issue that it's not a clear black letter law that if one can join such an organization, but this article in the Jewish Observer argued that the position of these 11 Gedolei Yisrael must be followed, and that it's binding, even though it's not a question of black letter law, because they have a certain divine inspiration based on their exceptional Torah knowledge, and that will allow them to determine what policy should be.
Is that an opinion?
I'm sorry?
It's an opinion and a very, very stark right-wing opinion.
Right. Generally,
this is
as good as Israel. Right. So the mainstream Haredi, it's definitely called the within the Shiva world and some parts of the Hasidic world that represents those parts of the Orthodox community. And he says in the underlying part, but in truth, it's only the intuitive, and I think the word intuitive is important, collective conscience of Talmidei Chachamim and Yireim of the age upon whose judgment reliance can be placed in the matter. So there's more of a intuitive aspect, not just knowledge of the Torah to apply to halachic issues, but intuitively, these Gedolei Yisrael felt that that the Orthodox community should not join such an organization. Rav Soloveitchik Again, while not endorsing non-Orthodox Judaism, any type of religious and halachic way, felt that on public policy this was a proper decision. But what this article by Rabbi Weinberger is saying is that he was taking the position that the Rosh Yeshiva, those associated with the Agudas Yisrael should be followed because of this. Really, this is an application of Das Torah. We have the next quote of Moshe Scherer, who is longtime of Agudas Yisrael, and very much promoted this the idea and the Agudas Yisrael to this day. It's really a hallmark of how they operate. They have a council of Torah sages in Moatzes Gedolei Torah, and as we saw, that they maintain that on issues of communal policy, there's a certain intuition that comes from immersion in Torah, and perhaps even from exclusive immersion in Torah, according to this perspective. The next position by Rabbi Avi Shafran, he's the spokesperson for Agudas Yisrael. So he says what Das Torah means, simply put, is that those most imbued with Torah knowledge who have internalized a large degree of the perfection of values and refinement of character that the Torah idealizes are thereby rendered, this is source 11, particularly, indeed, extraordinarily qualified to offer an authentic Jewish perspective on matters of import to Jews, just as expert doctors are those most qualified, though still fallible, to be sure, and mentioned that a Beis Din can make a mistake, the great Sanhedrin can make a mistake and have to bring a korban on behalf of the tzibor. So certainly no one is saying that anyone is infallible, but just like maybe even a doctor has a certain doctor who's an expert, who's been practicing medicine for many years, there maybe are a couple of different medical options, but you could say, within limits, there's a certain intuition. A doctor, let's say, has seen so many similar cases that, okay, can make there's a certain judgment call. Maybe other doctors might disagree, but he's comparing this to a soon-to-be limited group or stature of Torah scholars that can offer guidance in other areas. And maybe we can, I think this will have to be a three-part shiur, because this was the, this is a group of Haredi perspective, let's say pro-Das Torah perspective, though it could be that other perspectives are not necessarily anti-Das Torah, but certainly the idea that one, perhaps leaning towards the fact that Das Torah is had by people with involvement in Torah and really not in secular involvement, and also that Das Torah goes beyond black letter law. Rabbi Yitzchak Adlerstein, in California, he's a prolific writer. At source 12, he says, and we'll end here, and we'll go to the next part next week, Yitzchak Hashem, that many of us realize that the concept of Das Torah underwent a transformation in the last decades. Some of it was for the better, much not. It has worked for some people and put others on spiritual skids. The new Das Torah has stifled individuality and creativity and muted the voices of local Rabbanim. It has narrowed the boundaries of our world and erased diversity. It has contributed to a backlash in some parts of the Orthodox world that have thrown out the notion of authority altogether and replaced it with the Egel Azov, the golden calf of personal autonomy. He says, many of us have watched friends, neighbors, Talmidim grow secretly cynical of all rabbinic pronouncements in such a system they can form outwardly and secretly reject. For those of us who remain intensely committed to the importance of Das Torah, at least the way it was understood not so long ago and for centuries before, is the unkindest cut of them all. The stretching of Das Torah beyond what it ever was for the purpose of elevating it has succeeded in toppling it altogether in parts of the Olam HaTorah. So he He says this should not be. We must have the courage to forego going, quote-unquote, going to the top for every decision in life, personal and communal. We must reinvest confidence in a local mori hara, local authority, and in ourselves. We must do this not to destroy Das Torah, chas v'shalom, but to save it from its own excess. So he's probably, would be classified as, I guess, in the left-wing perspective, left-wing end of the Haredi community. I think that's how we've written. I think that's how he self-identifies, and probably his position is more nuanced. That, as Steve was saying, that when we take, and Rabbi Adlerstein is saying as well, sometimes when we take matters that even great Torah scholars don't have the expertise to rule on, so then sometimes perhaps their advice. And maybe Rabbi Dessler would say it's only our perception, but rather is that their advice does not necessarily yield the kind of outcome that would be most beneficial, and therefore people become cynical of the system.
So right. But you have his comment in the same camp, even though it's a cautionary note that by making Das Torah the be-all and the end-all of the Emunat Chachamim, that it's diminished the role of local rabbanas.
And in particular things that go beyond, that are certain decisions that seemingly people who have learned a lot of Torah don't necessarily have expertise on. I heard an interview with Rabbi Zev Lef. He's a rabbi in Israel. And also he's definitely identifies with the Haredi community. Maybe he's more on the liberal end of that, and he also said in this interview that if a Torah scholar has some kind of knowledge or expertise, let's say of medicine, so one can go to them. If not, then great Torah knowledge does not necessarily give them insight into other areas that they don't have expertise. So even within the Haredi community, there's a range of perspectives, and there really is a question how far this should be taken. And as Rabbi Adlerstein, in his observation, it was taken farther than it had been even in previous generations, even when we were speaking about listening to Torah scholars. So Rabbi Adlerstein is observing that this was perhaps taken even farther on issues that, let's say, Rabbanim don't have. There are some great Torah scholars that don't have the expertise on certain issues. So he really leaves it on a cautionary note. So we've seen the sources in the Torah and the Rishonim. We've seen very staunch pro-Das Torah, that it's really without secular knowledge and on virtually all issues. And we have the perspective of Rabbi Adlerstein and Rabbi Lef, that Torah scholars have great wisdom, but there are certain issues that are beyond the purview and that one should ask experts in those fields.
Even the Chazon Ish cracked open a window a little bit in his opinion, saying that within those parameters of the of what's okay for human research, it helps. That secular.
This was, I think, Rav Hirsch. I think it was Rav Hirsch.
Wasn't it under your section on the Chazon Ish?
I think it was Rabbi Hirsch.
Look at the source. Oh, so it's right under the Chazon.
Right. And he was sometime before. So there is somewhat of a range, and the Mirz Hashem next week, if we're interested, we'll see non-Haredi perspectives, and those perspectives will range, but will have more of a limited view of issues that one consults great Torah scholars, though it's certainly, just like in the Haredi perspective, it's certainly not monolithic. From the non-Haredi perspective, it also won't be monolithic, and hopefully we'll take a look next week.